Hello, this is Eric Sinrod in San Francisco and
Jonathan Armstrong here from the UK.
And we're here with the Duane Morris Law Firm bringing you our weekly Tech Law 10 podcast on interesting matters where the law and information technology intersect. I'm pleased that Jonathan could join us even though he's snowed in England, but he is here. So Jonathan, notwithstanding the snow, let me frame the topic for today. We're going to discuss WikiLeaks. This has, you know, been a hot topic in the news, and you know, even though it's, you know, bubbled up, you know, publicly as a controversial matter of late, you've been saying for quite a while that WikiLeaks presents a particular type of risk. Can you describe that for us?
Yes, I'm happy to, and thanks for noticing, Eric. Yeah, I guess I've been saying for almost a year now that I thought that this was almost an accident waiting to happen. And I think there were a number of reasons why, without going into the details as to whether what WikiLeaks have done is right or wrong, it's clearly an organization that was set up to put information into the public domain with very little comeback on the people behind it. We have a quite curious founder, and I think that the bail hearing that we've just had in the UK proves that he's an interesting individual. And we have the use of technology and mirror servers, which means that WikiLeaks is very fleet of foot, and as we've seen, it can move to different servers around the world and rely on different friends to do it favors. But the thing that I thought was particularly intriguing about their model when I looked at it the back end of last year is it almost had like a pyramid selling type mentality in the way it was set up. And effectively how it worked is that if you had secrets to leak via WikiLeaks, you were encouraged to go out and befriend mainstream media and get them to come and look at the site as well. And that has a cumulative effect, so that if 100 people put their secrets onto the site and each of them only brings 5 mainstream journalists to the site, then obviously you've got 500 journalists reading that story rather than just 1, 2, or 3. And as WikiLeaks has grown over the last year or so, we've found more and more mainstream journalists plugging into WikiLeaks for the source of their stories. That's obviously going to happen even more so now, and with more rapid spread into the mainstream media world. So I never really thought that WikiLeaks would be an isolated site and one that would almost do its most damage on the internet. But I thought it was that quite clever way of branching into the mainstream media that caused the major threat. And regrettably, I think that's proved to be the case.
Well, I'm not sure this is so much an accident waiting to happen. Wasn't this something more intended to happen? And the consequences really have been rather alarming in the view of some people. You know, the revelation of U.S. government secrets, for example. You know, we've heard recently that WikiLeaks, if it can, will soon bring out communications that could, you know, bring a major U.S. bank to its knees. And there's been some scurrying about that. Mm-hmm. And the share price of one particular U.S. bank went down on news of that, even though it hasn't come out yet. So, you know, what do you think?
And went down by the billions of dollars, didn't it? I mean, I think just over, a billion U.S. dollars its share price dropped. Because it was suspected of being the bank involved.
Well, that's right. And these communications didn't even come out yet. It was simply the prospect that WikiLeaks might have, you know, the goods that they could bring, you know, to the public's attention by way of, you know, potentially confidential information that could incriminate the bank. So that shows you what a phenomenon this has become. And you know, is that a good thing?
I think in some respects, it can be a good thing. I think the attitude of whistleblowers varies across Europe. The UK is generally more pro-whistleblower. I'd be interested in your views on that, Eric. What's the US's view on whistleblowing?
Well, you know, we do have some protections in our laws that allow, you know, appropriate whistleblowing to happen, to bring to light where it needs to misdeeds and corruption, and to afford some sort of protection so that the little guy who wants to come forward and say, look, this is what's happening, doesn't suffer, you know, terrible retaliation and reprisals. My concern is that, you know, WikiLeaks could be viewed as whistleblowing on steroids. And,
yeah,
you know, bringing out, you know, classified, you know, government secrets, might cause so much concern that the pendulum can really swing in a direction whereby there could be clamping down on very legitimate, whistleblowing. And so, you know, I have one concern there. I have another concern that, you know, you need to have protected forums where speech can occur. There needs to be an avenue for communication. And if even classified documents can come to light, it makes it very difficult for government officials to candidly communicate with one another on top secret matters where they need to. Because then they need to even be clipped and protected there and not let their hair hang down and tell each other what they really need to. And you know, how can you move forward in that type of a climate? That is a concern.
I think you're right. And I think on maybe our last podcast or the one before, we talked about the proposals here in Europe to have this security agency called ENISA based in Greece to log critical national infrastructure. And if one good thing comes out of this WikiLeaks debacle, it might be that we stop what I think is frankly quite a foolish idea of putting all of our secrets in one place, because WikiLeaks tells us that with the power of the memory stick and even just one individual who's determined to get that information onto the stick and into the public domain, no secret is safe anymore. And to put all of your secrets in one place, as some of the European authorities seem to be proposing, seems to me to be just absurd in this new world that we're going to have to live in. And I think it is game-changing. I think WikiLeaks is. I think for most corporations, like the bank concern, they're going to have to patrol WikiLeaks on a daily basis now, because they're going to have to respond that quickly to the potential damage to their share price. I think it is a game changer. I don't know about you, Eric.
Well, I have to agree. And, you know, one reason this is a hot topic is because, you know, there are those obviously on the side of being concerned about information exposure that shouldn't see the light of day. And then there are others that are, you know, WikiLeaks has many supporters and that, you know, information, you know, should be free and should be disseminated as widely as possible. And you know, there are reports that, you know, certain activists that are sympathetic for WikiLeaks, you know, for example, have been launching cyber attacks. And the MasterCard website was down recently, and the allegation or the suggestion is that that was brought down by cyber attackers who were upset that MasterCard stopped processing donations for WikiLeaks. So you know, this is a hornet's nest of an issue. We've probably run our time here. But we certainly thought it would be appropriate, you know, to discuss in this podcast some of the threads of issues that are, you know, weaving around this particular matter at this current time. Any final thoughts, Jonathan?
Maybe I'll just leave you with a three-step plan of action. I think, firstly, for most corporates, they've got to monitor their reputation. Secondly, they've got to be prepared to act very quickly to counter those rumors, to put their own side of the story into the public domain and to respond quickly. And thirdly, I think, and I've done it myself, the follow the money philosophy that some have been following of, you know, you don't get these mirror sites very easily, but you can get at their revenue, is certainly something that people will have to consider. As I say, I've done it myself to close the site down, and I think often that's the right tactic. So, simple three-step plan. Maybe we'll revisit that in a future podcast and try and expand on that. And we'd be pleased to hear your thoughts as ever. My email address is jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. And Eric?
Mine is EJ Sinrod, S-I-N-R-O-D, @duanemorris.com. And you can track us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. And it'll be interesting to see how this moves forward in the future, including the criminal proceeding with Mr. Assange in England. So thank you for touching base, Jonathan. I hope you dig out of the snow soon, and we'll be back at you with another Tech Law 10 next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening.